D-Mace, Vin, Gittendonick, 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. Vanderbilt returns to action Saturday morning against LSU, an 11 a.m. kickoff. And I found this to be astounding, gentlemen. According to CBS Sports, this is the first time the Commodores have been favored against LSU since 1948. So it's been a minute. And that, with that said, let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. Clark, good to catch up with you after your off week. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm curious which one of you guys is going to be up at 11 a.m. for the game on Saturday. I hope you guys aren't sleeping in.
Clark, I'm up.
Clark, I have a four-year-old. I am up way before 11 a.m. So I will be very much awake for the game against LSU. But before we get into that matchup, I know that you are close with Brian Callahan. You know that this business is unforgiving. How did you feel when you heard the news on Monday, and have you reached out to Brian over the past couple of days?
Oh, of course I have. I mean, Callie and I maintain contact throughout the year, and look, I mean, personally, obviously I've hurt for him. I'm frustrated for him. I believe in him, and I know him to be a great coach and a great person. And, you know, it's a brutal business that way. And we sign up for it too, guys. So it's not like, I think he'd be the first one to tell you that we're not victimized when those things happen. And he's going to set his jaw, and he's going to be back at it and continue on his career, and this will be a learning experience. But obviously I hurt for him and his family, and looking forward to seeing him soon, and we've been in touch, and you know, he would do the same for me. So tough deal, and winning is so hard at these levels. It takes a total alignment. It takes everyone on the same page, and sometimes coaches get too much credit, and sometimes coaches bear the brunt of the blame, and that is part of it. But it was a tough week that way.
Looking back quickly at the loss at Alabama, the red zone turnovers your team had against the Crimson Tide were a major turning point in that game. I know that your program had the fewest turnovers in the country last season, just 7 turnovers. By my math, you're up to 6 so far this season. What have you emphasized with your team this week leading into the LSU game to make sure that you are taking better care of the ball?
Well, I've told them that we only have one left to create. You know, we can't go beyond what we did a year ago. And so that's it. No, I'm just kidding. I want there to be an attitude of aggression. I want there to be a playing free and playing loose. That's when we're at our best. I want to be able to let Diego Pavia play to his personality. And yet we know a part of our formula is maintaining possession of the ball. And when we've done that, obviously we've been really efficient in how we've finished drives. We've finished drives scoring points and a lot of times scoring touchdowns this year. So, you know, 2 critical mistakes in the Alabama game. It's hard to win against good teams on the road when you make those self-inflicted wounds. So we've emphasized how important it is to take care of the ball. And I think there's the point at which where you don't linger too long on the pass game. It's hard with a bye week because it's the last kind of taste in your mouth. But hey, how do we learn from it? Turn the page, move forward, and then just focus on being better for LSU. But certainly that's something that we've talked about, we've addressed. We want to make good decisions with the ball and protect the ball when we're running it. I expect us to be better, and yet we won't be perfect. And we have to be able to account for that in the way we play in all 3 phases to make sure that we're strong as a team.
We'll talk with Clark Lee, Vanderbilt's head football coach. Now, Coach, if you're watching that game, and I know you probably look look at it totally different. You're watching that game, and as a spectator or a former player, I'm watching it and I'm saying, man, outside of those two mishaps, I'm not sure if we saw the better team win the game. And with that said, how is it? Is it a good thing to have a loss like that to, and then go into a bad week? Or is it, do you want to play the very next week? Because you did talk about, you know, having that loss, having that taste in your mouth, and then having to go the whole week and 2 weeks to even get a chance to get it out of your mouth.
But typically, I think it's good to get back on the field. Mm-hmm. For us, you know, that was six straight weeks coming out of training camp where we had played. So we were due a bye week, and I appreciated, I think the team appreciated the mental reset. So it came at the right time for us. You know, we moved past that game. We're you know, this is a resilient group. It's a mature group. It's not a group that we got to sit there and beat over the head with, you know, every single mistake that was made. Or, you know, we communicate pretty clearly and directly the things we want to improve upon. We did that. We got back on the practice field. We were able to have some fun out there and enjoy competing. We got a couple days off, which allowed our players to get home, which was really, I think, beneficial to them. And then Sunday we got back to work on LSU. We really had a spirited practice to start our week off. So typically it's good to get back out on the field and have another game to focus on. In this case, the bye week came at the right time for us just to get us a mental reset. And I've been pleased with how the team's come out and focused and prepped this week to this point.
Now, Coach, you don't have many teams that are able to hold opponents under 11 points or less, and you're walking into a situation where, or they're walking, coming here, to where the LSU defense don't allow that many points. In an era where offenses are scoring 30, close to 40 points in a game, what is it that LSU, or have they done to make it difficult for teams to score?
Well, they force you to operate at a high level. I think the first thing is they're so disruptive in their front seven that, you know, they get you off schedule. You know, the way they pressure, it's both what they're doing schematically and who they're doing with that is particularly challenging. So you have to communicate to try to pick up those pressures, try to cover them up in the run game. Obviously, try to create space in the pocket in the pass game. You know, they're multiple in how they play zone, man, bracket. They kind of do it all. And, you know, the space that you feel like is open on a given snap, when you find it, it closes really rapidly. So it's not a group that gives up a ton of explosive plays. It's a group that forces you to play methodically and really forces you to execute and also play with patience. And that's going to be the key to the game on Saturday is, first of all, not losing patience when we absorb some TFLs or absorb some negative yardage plays. You know, being content, taking the space that's given to us and trying to, you know, really march the ball down the field methodically and hopefully, you know, force them into making mistakes. And then the last thing is, I mean, they've been really opportunistic with turnovers. Theirs look different than ours. I mean, we've forced and recovered a bunch of fumbles. They've intercepted the ball a lot, and that has to do with the pressure they create in their pass rush and their blitz game and quarterbacks kind of panicking and throwing the ball up into coverage down the field. So, you know, they're going to force us to play a clean game. They're really, really skilled on defense and you know, it'll be a challenge, but it's also something that, you know, we look forward to. That's why you want to play in the SEC, is to face these great defenses. And, you know, we'll have our plan and we'll need to execute our plan on Saturday.
Talking with Clark Lee, head football coach at Vanderbilt. They've got the big game against LSU coming up Saturday at 11. And Clark, unfortunately, I will be in Winnipeg. Canada is not the best place to watch a lot of college football games. You kind of get what you get. But I will find a way. I'm going to find some way to watch you guys. While the morning skate's going on, I want to ask you about how Diego Pavia has handled himself since the Alabama loss. I thought it was great how he handled himself in the press conference. You know, he was mature. He took responsibility, et cetera. You know, there's so much spotlight on him. You got Johnny Manziel down there. What have you seen from him since that loss? Because I know if we know anything about him, he's determined and he's going to want to bounce back.
Well, he plays with a lot on the line. You know, that's kind of what makes him special is when he's out there. I mean, it's personal to him. He is the ultimate competitor, and You know, but the thing that's always been true about Diego is he understands the responsibility he has as a leader. He wants the burden of responsibility in terms of putting the game on his shoulders and making the plays he needs to make. And he's always been great about taking responsibility that way. So no surprises that he was able to see it clearly after the game and took ownership. And he's been great. I mean, right back to work and excited about prep and speaking confidence into the team and, you know, all the things that we expect from him. He just, the game's never too big for him. The moment's never too big for him. He takes it all in stride. And, you know, there's a lot, I think, that is created around him with respect to swagger. I've always said this, the things that...
Clark's phone is breaking up. We will reconnect with Clark Lee here in just a moment. But Willie, let's expand on what you were asking Clark there as we look to get him back on the phone.
Well, I think I was impressed in that press conference because he was disappointed, you could tell, in the way he played. He has a high standard for himself. We talked about the atmosphere there, having beaten Alabama the year before, how they were going to try to get after him. But that's why I think I was curious, and I'm not surprised at Coach Lee's answer on that as well. And so now he's had like Derek was asking, there's been extra time, you know, to go back to the drawing board where you're trying to rest, you're trying to recover, and at the same time you've got that burning determination to get back out there as fast as possible, and you got to wait an extra week. Plus, you're playing a really, really tough defense in LSU. What a great challenge going forward for him in particular against that LSU defense.
We welcome back Clark Lee. Clark, sorry about that. Please continue.
No, I don't know if it was something here or something in Winnipeg. I just you know, I there was some kind of crash across the way there with the construction, so maybe that disrupted the signal. But no, hey, long and short, his process, his connections, the quiet humility, the curiosity, that's what makes him unique, and that's what allows him to take responsibility in those moments where he plays with a lot on the line, but he understands that he's not entitled to results. And I got a ton of respect for him, so that's all.
I wanted to ask you one more about the makeup of your roster. There was a chart that circulated around about the uniqueness of your roster. You have a lot of graduate transfers, and you've got a lot of older players on the roster. And I can see that working to a team's advantage, but I think over the years you could see it work to your disadvantage if you've got guys that are just sort of playing out the string, getting a degree. You don't have them very long to develop them. What's the key in your mind to identifying the right kind of guys who you know you're not going to have for 4 or 5 years, but they can come in with the right mindset to blend and help your team?
Well, when they bring snap experience, that's a plus. And again, fortunately, this isn't like dealing with like veteran, you know, professionals where they're 35 or 36 and slowing down. These guys are, you know, 22, 23, and they're actually kind of in some ways hitting their prime. Snap experience is huge. The game moves slower for the guys that have played. You know, we have to be really good at teaching and training our systems to get them kind of hardwired into the player so that he can play to his instincts and not thinking on the field. But this is a really demanding environment we have. Football has to be important. You know, we ask these guys to commit a lot to the process, and that pretty much kind of filters the ones that we want to be in the program. That it has to be a football first decision. Obviously we have a great university and great graduate programs and all that stuff, but this needs to be about, you know, playing good football, about helping us win. And we're not going to allow someone to come here and circumvent the process or shortchange the process. There's a lot put on these guys with respect to time commitment, and it goes beyond the meetings and the training. And this is about how you live, how you fuel yourself, how you recover, how you sleep, all those things come into play. And so far we've found that balance where we're able to have an old team, which is great, and yet still have a team that's fighting for results on Saturdays.
Was that something philosophically you and your staff thought might work when you were evaluating everything? Because I like, for example, Tim Corbin, I know before the days of NIL and the transfer portal, he loved that developmental process of taking the high school athlete, having him for 3 or 4 years, et cetera. But it's evolved now, right? So how was that? How did that come? Why do you think you guys have so many older players?
Well, some of it is, and I know the COVID year guys are kind of weaning out of the system, but some of it is just you had a bunch of older players that had graduated from where they started that were looking for opportunities. And so there was just kind of this swell of that population of older, experienced players in the transfer portal. That's a part of it. You know, I think also the year-round commitment that these guys put in. I mean, we are basically with them. We have them 3 weeks in May. They're off, and then there are a couple of discretionary weeks otherwise. But I mean, this has really become kind of year-round immersion, and it allows us to build with these kind of these guys that are from outside the program. Where it used to be, it took 3 or 4 years to really get the system down. Now we've sped that up just because of the amount of time we spend together. And you know, for us, I think at Vanderbilt, we've always wanted to have an older team. You know, this has always been kind of the goal would be like, hey, you know, can we play teams that are playing, you know, freshman, sophomore players and third year players that are going to be leaving the our competitors, that can we fill the team with fourth and fifth year players? The vision was always that would come from within. And obviously that's been true in some cases, but you know, what we do when we go to the portal is we just address the needs of the roster. And we want to do that in ways in the portal that actually addresses the top end of our depth chart, not the foundation of our depth chart. So where we'll still have developmental players come in the system as high schoolers, our patience with development has changed a little bit, Willie. It's, you know, we say, hey, we want to see the potential for a player to get on the field within 2 years of him being here, because if it goes beyond that, there's actually a better answer to that need that exists in the portal than in high school recruiting. You just don't, it actually is a negative to wait longer than that. So a lot's changed in that time. There's still a blend here, but certainly when we go in the portal, we're looking to address top end of the depth chart, and that means snap experience is a premium, and we've been able to bring those guys in, kind of immerse them in our systems and get them ready to play. And that's been the formula that's worked for us the last couple of years.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick. Clark, thank you so much for your time. Good luck this weekend against LSU.
Thanks, guys. Great to be with y'all.
You as well. Clark Lee on the program, 615-737-1025. Vanderbilt favored by 2.5 over LSU, according to CBS. This is the first time the Commodores have been favored against LSU since 1948, and the first time they have been favored against a ranked opponent since at least 1978. Vanderbilt has played an astounding 176 consecutive games against ranked opponents as an underdog. We'll see if the Commodores can bounce back from the loss at Alabama at home on Saturday morning, an 11 o'clock kickoff against LSU. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we get back into the Titans. We have yet another Now They Tell Us story. And there was one section of this story that when I read it, my initial reaction was, ugh. We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, 1025, The Game.
With regards to the replacement, who is going to ultimately be the one to make that decision? I know you preach collaboration, but I mean, how is that process going to play out?
The collaboration you're talking about?
Right, as far as choosing who's going to be, not the interim, but the head coach, actually, not permanently, but going forward once the season's over.
Yeah, I think, like I said, Mike and I have been, you know, a big part of all those conversations with Amy. I don't know if I'm understanding your question correctly, but
basically what I'm asking is it going to be your decision, Amy's decision? Whose decision is it going to be to hire the next head coach for this
I got season. You. Yeah, we're all going to work on that together. But Mike and I will lead the – if you're asking, you know, as far as the search is concerned, Mike and I will lead that search.
That was Chad Brinker on Monday evening when pressed by Teron Davenport. Who's going to call the shot? Who is going to have the final decision on the next Tennessee Titans head coach? Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We are presented by Bax Homeworks. Get a free estimate now at baxhomeworks.com. At the beginning of the show, we talked about a story written by Michael Silver of The Athletic, taking a look behind the curtain on all that's gone wrong with the Tennessee Titans, leading up to the firing of Brian Callahan. He was not the only reporter to write such a story, which I know as the Now They Tell Us story. As Willie mentioned earlier, that's when the anonymous sources, who wouldn't speak to you on background, are willing to speak to you on background. These are all of the things we wished we knew while Brian Callahan was still here. But now that he's gone, people are comfortable saying things that they weren't comfortable saying before, hence the Now They Tell Us story. And Jonathan Jones had one on CBSSports.com that went live yesterday, which I thought was fantastic. So if you haven't read it, go to CBSSports.com. The headline, Brian Callahan's quick flameout continues the Titans' stunning three-year cycle of chaos. Now what? And there are a lot of things to get into, but I want to highlight the final two graphs, Willie and Derek, of this story. And when I read this, I audibly said, yikes, to myself. I was just reading it on my computer this morning, and when I read it, I said out loud, yikes. Quote, the hire, meaning the next coaching hire, must energize the fans, but he will also likely need to win over the media too. Amy Adams Strunk is known to read and listen to press clippings, while herself rarely speaking publicly. Her scarce interviews have been conducted by the team's internal media in recent years, and she did not even offer a statement in the announcement of Callahan's firing. That, by the way, was Chad Brinker, but here it is. As one source familiar with Strunk put it when asked what the most important aspect of the coaching search will be, quote, Amy doesn't want to get scolded in the media, end quote. So there are a lot of important things about this hire. But at least, according to this unnamed source familiar with Amy Adams Strunk, the most important aspect, Derek Mason, Amy doesn't want to get scolded in the media. And I said, yikes.
She shouldn't be worried about the media. Worry about your team getting better. So whether the media scolds you or not, you know, there's always going to be something that media, me included, don't like. About the team, you know, a hire, then, you know, there's always going to be something. So if that is true, what is being said, then your word yikes is an understatement. You know, regardless of who they choose to go get, this isn't a popularity contest. It's what is not. We've sat here, you know, for the last really 8 years, going back to when they hired Vrabel. It's all about, you know, did he win the press conference? Did this guy win the press conference? I don't give a damn about winning a press conference no more. Win games. I don't care if he come in here and say, you know what, F all y'all as reporters. I'm here winning games. Okay, great. Just win them. So I don't care how he looks when it comes to media. And Amy shouldn't either. But I get it. Because that new stadium is being open, and when you have a microphone like this, a lot of people are listening to you, and she may start to get a lot of feedback that she may listen to that she shouldn't be listening to. So it's understandable because you want to be looked at in a favorable way, especially when you're asking people for a lot of money and asking them to fill that new stadium. You need to be looked upon as favorable. But it's gotten to a point where I don't care if I like the coach, the fans, If he's winning, he's winning. See, that's why Vrabel's out of here. Because everybody started to dislike Vrabel. Everybody, his stick wore thin on people now. That arrogance, people don't want it no more because you're not winning. And what did she do? She made a change. Why? Because she was getting scolded by the media because they were talking bad about Vrabel and how bad this team was. Well, if that's what you believe, if that is true, what is coming out of this building, then wow is an understatement because we are in for it. We really are. As an owner, you shouldn't care. Like, unless your team is consistently losing, then you care, like your fan base. Okay, yeah, I got to get rid of this coach. But when you're talking about hiring a coach, no, I'm not worried about getting the praise from the media. I don't care about the media. I just want to hire the right guy. Because best believe, if he starts winning, y'all ain't going to say nothing. And even if y'all liked him, Vrabel, when he started losing, what did y'all do? Y'all turned on him. All y'all turned on him. Y'all said y'all was tired of his stick. So, Amy, you shouldn't worry about what we say. Just hire the best coach for the job.
But I wonder what her role should be in the process. I think that is a little bit of what Teron was asking, is could anybody define the interview process? Like, for example, I believe Burke Nihil is in this process, and that what's his role? Like, he's not a football guy. He's an executive, but he, I believe, has been in some of these searches. There was an article that came out about how instrumental he was in finding Rand Carthon. So, and that, as we found out, did not really fall into line with Mike Vrabel, and that became a thing. Right? Whether right or wrong, that was another chapter in this. What's the line of communication? How does the system work? I think there are some that would say that the owner shouldn't even be in the room. Maybe Amy Adams Strunk doesn't even want to be in the room. That's why she deferred to Chad Brinker to try to set up a system to where they could do this and make sound decisions. As far as the scolded in the media, Adam, I do wonder this. Do you think with Mike Vrabel coming in on Sunday that influenced her to say, you know what, I don't want to set up a situation where Callahan loses to Vrabel and I got to hear it from everybody. I'm going to get booed right out of the stadium if that happens. So let's not give him the satisfaction of beating Callahan. Do you think that entered her mind at all? I'm just wondering, what is it that puts it over the top?
Without knowing Amy Adams Strunk, yes. I absolutely do believe that she wanted to avoid Mike Vrabel coming in here with the Patriots, who are playing quite well. Drake May looks great. She wanted to avoid Mike Vrabel coming in here and humiliating Brian Callahan. Now, I'm sure there is part of Vrabel somewhere in that heart of his that feels like he still got one up on them anyway, because they fired Brian Callahan. The guy you fired me to, the guy you hired to replace me after you fired me, got fired after 23 games. I've won more games this season than that bum won in a year and a third. So I'm sure part of him still feels that way somewhere in there. We know Mike Vrabel. He can be a little petty. I bet he's feeling that way. But to answer
he's
your
a competitor.
Yes.
He's a competitor. And so, D-Mates, I also wonder this.
But to answer your question, yes, I do believe that had something to do with it.
I think so, too. And Derek, I think as well, from Mike Vrabel's standpoint, can't prove it. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder if he looks back on it and says, you know what? I could see the problems coming on the roster. They actually did me a favor in getting me out of there so I could go somewhere else where maybe I catch the train that's speeding up and going into a place to win faster. Because if he was being honest, he probably could have looked at the Titans roster and said, you know, it would have been a chore, regardless of how I felt about Rand Carthon at the time or anything like that. It would have been very difficult to fix it regardless of who the GM was or who the coach was, because the roster, you could already see the flaws in the roster coming.
It it amazes me that for the last 3 years, and this is not a good thing. The more and more I think about this, this is not a good thing. Over the last 3 years, we have talked more or as equally as more. Equally, it's the same amount as. We've talked about them from a management standpoint just as much as we talked about the X's and O's. And that's a damn shame. You know that? Just think about that.
I miss the days when we could break down matchups.
Break down matchups, and you just kind of go from there where, yes, the Titans are, yes, they're strong here, they're doing this, yes,
the
man.
The Titans have a huge matchup coming up this weekend against the Baltimore Ravens. What are the keys to the game?
So I'm tired.
Nobody cares about that anymore.
So
when was the last time y'all had a conversation like that?
It was. Right. It's becoming annoying. I know it's possibly good radio. It's great radio when you're listening to us. But it's just, I just find this sort of odd. Like over the last 3 years, man, we've talked more about just as much about upper management and the structure and how things look or don't look than we have actually talked about the play on the field. And if you are a owner, that's not good. So I can.
No, it's not.
I see why she says she wants
Vrabel
to be.
Is in
you know.
Her head a little bit because I guarantee you. I don't. I can't prove this. I don't know Mike Vrabel at all, right? Other than watching him day in and day out for all the years he was here, but he strikes me as a guy that probably is sitting there in New England right now, going, "You know what? This worked out for the best." He saw the dysfunction firsthand, year after year. He did his best to overcome it. He gave them national credibility. But he also could see, oh boy, we've screwed up some of these drafts. It was a good time to get off the ride in Nashville and get on the ride somewhere else. And it happened to be New England where he got on the ride. And he's got a good quarterback. And he's moving that program in the right direction because they're a year or two ahead in the process. They didn't draft very well either. But they had a key piece. And they had a lot of money to spend. And he comes in and he's got them. I don't know how well they're going to end up. They're ahead of schedule now. I don't think they're that great, but do you think he's sitting there going, man, this actually was a good thing that I got canned in Nashville? He's probably not going like, well, I want to stick it to Nashville. He probably looks back and says, I had a good time with the Titans. It was what it was, but now I like where I'm at.
He gave it that Floyd Reese laugh probably. I could just see it. I could just hear it come out of his mouth. Like, I hear Floyd, and he's sitting back, and he's just laughing. When that question, and then he probably answered, that's Vrabel. He probably gave a Floyd Reese laugh, chuckle, and then thought, man, I'm glad I'm out of there.
What's the old saying? Looking great is the best revenge? Or something like that. I don't know. Mike Vrabel looks pretty great right now in that sleeveless zip-up thing he always wears on the sideline. 615-737-1025. We will take your reaction again. Jonathan Jones of CBS Sports had a great Now They Tell Us story looking at what the hell has been going on behind the scenes with the Titans. The final graph of this story, quote, as one source familiar with Amy Adams Strunk put it when asked what the most important aspect of this coaching search will be, Amy doesn't want to get scolded in the media. There are some other nuggets in this story that we will react to next, as well as your reaction. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Talking Jonathan Jones's, let's call it an expose, on CBSSports.com, looking at the mess that the Tennessee Titans have found themselves in and why they find themselves in that mess. Here's another interesting nugget or two from this story. Jonathan Jones reports that Dan Quinn, who was then the Cowboys defensive coordinator, now the head coach of the Commanders, interviewed with the Titans virtually, but did not make the second round of interviews. Quinn, quote, was just days removed from giving up 48 points at home to the Packers in the divisional round, and sources say Strunk couldn't shake the stink of that, plus the image of the 28-3 Super Bowl collapse when Quinn was the head coach of the Falcons. It later talks about how the Titans landed on Callahan. It mentions the allure of being able to bring his dad, Bill, into the picture. But Jonathan Jones reports, quote, the Titans were so focused on a play-calling head coach and legendary offensive line coach that they failed in other areas of the staff. Callahan hired Colt Anderson as the special teams coordinator, and the Titans went on to have one of the worst seasons of all special teams groups in the league. Callahan fired Anderson after the season and hired Bones Fossil. So some other interesting tidbits in that story. Let's get your reaction, 615-737-1025. Let's go to Mike on our phone line. Mike, thank you for calling and waiting. Please go ahead.
Well, can I bring you guys to some reality?
Sure, why not?
All right, we got Amy Adams. She's an NFL owner. She gets guaranteed profit money, correct?
Yes.
What NFL team has ever failed and went bankrupt and left town? None. Since the NFL started. And throw out the XFL or the those startup leagues. They all went out of business. But the NFL is still in business, and there is not one team owner that is losing money. Jerry Jones is now gone 29 years without a Super Bowl, yet he built the pin down there in Arlington. And guess what he's made on that dome stadium? Amy is smart. She's looking at the Tennessee Titans saying, I got a losing team. They came up from Houston. We didn't win there. They're not winning here. And we're just going down the tubes here. But she's looking at it from a business standpoint. I can sit here and still make a profit on the Titans because I'm an NFL owner. But when that new dome stadium opens, man, am I going to make 10 times more venue money from other things other than the Tennessee Titans. And what I'm saying now is that if we don't bring in some new management that really wants to win a Super Bowl, and I don't think we have it at all. It's all about business. It's all about money. And it's all about that new dome stadium that I'm going to tell you right now, she's smart. She's figuring it out that, you know what? The dome stadium is going to bring me in 10 times more revenue than the Titans.
Thank you for the call, Mike.
That's not a new revelation. I mean, she knew that when her daddy owned the team, how much money the NFL. I've said before, NFL is recession proof. So anybody that says, oh, this is going to doom the NFL, that is going to doom the NFL, just sit on the sideline because it's not. They're recession-proof. It's not going to happen. But I'm not going to sit here and believe that Amy doesn't want to win a championship. That's what I'm not going to do because I don't think that's the case. Now, has she gone about it the right way? Probably not. And will it change? I don't know. But I'm not going to sit here and say she doesn't want to win a championship because, frankly, before she took over, this was a hot mess. And I'm talking about everything was a hot mess. Players didn't like everything was a hot mess before she took over. She took over, she stabilized, she made it better. Now the play on the field has to be consistent. I take offense to him saying, well, this team was in Houston and never won. This team won a lot of games in Houston. They did. And we won a lot of games here in Nashville. But right now, they're not winning a lot of games. And they're trying to figure out a way how to win more games. But she wants to win. She just hadn't went about it the right way, so to speak.
Blake in Hendersonville on our text line says, Burke Nihil being involved in any football operations is ludicrous. I need someone to explain to me how a lawyer from Staples is allowed any decision power in football operations. And Willie, here is where I stand on the coaching search for the Titans. We played the clip earlier, Teron Davenport trying to pin down Chad Brinker. Who is making the decision? He said that himself and Mike Borgonzi will lead the search. I know that this isn't going to happen, but here is what I am hoping does happen. And I've heard Paul Kaharsky say something similar on our station as well. If Brinker and Borgonzi are leading the search, quite frankly, I want them to be the only two people involved in the search. And I know a lot of you do not trust Chad Brinker, but Amy Adams Strunk does. So I want to keep the hiring committee to as few people as I possibly can. Let Brinker and Borgonzi lead the search. And I don't want Burke Nihil or Amy Adams Strunk to meet this coach until Brinker and Borgonzi say, this is our guy.
I don't want Brinker to be a part of it.
You just want Borgonzi.
Let the GM do a GM job.
Willie, where do you stand on this?
I've given this some thought. Because if I'm at the top, if I'm Amy Adams Strunk or I'm even Chad Brinker, I got to look around and say the last few searches haven't gone very well. And I think if you trust your GM, Mike Borgonzi should be the guy that makes the call. Now, Mike Borgonzi is a young, first-time NFL GM. So he hadn't been around the block very often, not as the head guy. You know, he's probably been through these searches in Kansas City. But I think I would delegate down the chain and say the GM should pick the coach. That's why we hired the GM. And the GM can consult whoever he wants on his own. But maybe he even chooses to bring in some people in the interview process. Maybe it's some of the assistant GMs. They got a million of those sitting around there, right? How many assistant GMs do they have? But I do think the GM should hire the coach.
It's again, like you said, Willie, now if he wants to make Brinker a part of it, then okay. But allow the GM to do a GM's job. Allow him to be the figurehead or the one that's going to spearhead this coaching search. And allow him to collaborate with you, Brinker, because you've done this before and it didn't work out. We see it after a season and five games, you fired the coach that you helped hire. I'm not going to forget that. Don't nobody let him forget that. He helped hire Brian Callahan. You're not getting off that easy. I'm not going to let you forget it. Hopefully nobody else allows you to forget it. You were in the room. You sat in the room. You heard. They asked for your opinion. You were on board. Hooray. Yes, everything. You was a part of that. Don't try to get away from it. Don't try to erase it. That was you. Your stench is still on it. So you know what? Borgonzi, he's been a part of that. He's been a part of championships recently. He's seen what winning looks like recently. Let that guy do it. He'll just consult with you. But let that guy do it. You can still be supreme ruler of everything else. But this moment, because essentially what's going to happen is he going to get fired if it don't work anyway. And you not. That's the way it seems, right? Because you've outlasted people. So let him. You hired him. You and Amy hired Borgonzi to be the GM. Let him do the job of a GM. Let him consult with y'all. Don't consult with him, okay? Because y'all tried it. You and Rand tried it before and see what happened. Y'all fired the guy y'all hired a year and 8 games ago, 5 games ago. Let Borgonzi do it, please.
You are quite convincing, Derek, with that. Dustin in Hopkinsville says, it's never getting fixed till your chain of command is an actual chain of command. Borgonzi got dogs and players. He will find a dog and a coach. It's his time. Brinker should have been sent out Monday, too. He should have left with Rand. He's a snake. He's worse than incompetent. He's a backstabber. Till the poison's gone, the infection will persist and spread. That's ominous. JD says, let the GM do the GM job. Stop allowing Brinker to be the front man and give us more word vomit. Brinker is a loser. Stop letting him run this organization down the hole just so that he can get up and feed his ego and talk on a microphone. Bob in Mount Juliet says, don't you guys know that Chad Brinker is the GM of the Titans? He released the statement and he led the press conference the other day. If you think Mike Borgonzi is calling any shots, much less the head coach, you know better than that.
Well, I mean, listen, if you're judging it by the press release, which Brinker, not the GM and not the owner. He did say he is the voice for the owner. So He is sort of the owner in a sense, kind of, sort of, at times, because he has to, you know, say what the owner says.
Well, he plays the same role.
Yeah, but I
that
get it.
Sean Henry plays with the Predators. Sean Henry speaks on behalf of ownership. That's
yeah,
the
but
same
Sean
thing.
Henry ain't doing what he doing.
Correct.
Sean Henry, no. No, I think if he was like Sean Henry, I'm sure this team would be better.
I would agree with that.
Okay, but that's not the case. Again, I don't know if he's competent or not competent to do the job. All I know is that you were a part of the last hire, and everybody knew it. And you ran, all y'all made it known that you were a part of this, a big part. I don't want you to be a part of it again. You tried. You had your shot. Good job, young man. Move over. Let the other guy try. We're not firing you. Stay at your position. Be Amy's right hand, you know. But let the guy that has recently won championships and recently put together a team, a good team, helped put together a good team, let that guy try it now. Just let him try it. You ain't got nothing to lose. Well, maybe. No, you ain't even got your job to lose. Because it ain't you. It's going to be him. So give him a shot. Let him try. Let's see how it goes.
615-737-1025. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on all of this. We'll get yours too. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.